acorns are dropping off my Chinese house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Welcome to Yarns at Yinhu, a podcast about the fiber arts and other post-apocalyptic skills. Episode 53, Extant of Autumn. Sunday, September 14th, 2014. I'm your host, Sarah, podcasting from Yinhu Chaiyuan, Silver Lake Tea House. Show notes for this episode can be found on my website, yarns@yinhu.com. You can find me on social media as Sarah Pomegranate. Yarns at Yinhu has a Facebook page and is available on iTunes. Today's episode includes the following segments: On the Porch, Ever Expanding Skill Set, Yarn Lover at Large, and Off the Shelf. Welcome to new members who have introduced themselves on the Ravelry board. Welcome Seattle Knitter Guy, who is David, and OTP2, who is Linda from Bridgewater, New Jersey. There is also a new iTunes review from Small Time OK Farmer. Thank you so much for that 5-star rating and review. And a few folks have left a comment on the Yarns at Yinhu website recently. Maggie of Maggie's Corner, Andrea D., Andy, Cassidy, and Judy, who says she's been enjoying Mary Oliver. Thank you for those comments, for your interaction on the Ravelry boards, comments on my Instagram posts, and for listening to the show. On the Porch. There are no completed projects this week, and I haven't begun anything new, so I'll just do a quick review of some projects that I'm working on and which I plan to finish before the end of September. I have completed all of the spindle spinning of Rooftop, a colorway from Three Waters Farm. This is a Polwarth silk blend, and I have spun all 4 ounces on my Jenkins Turkish spindle. I'm participating in a fall mini spin-along with the folks on the Ravelry board for Jenkins Woodworking. I was a little disappointed that I didn't get to spinning the Three Waters Farm fiber this summer during Tour de Fleece. So when the Jenkins Woodworking Challenge came along, I decided I would do that. I never thought I would be able to spin 4 ounces, an entire braid, on a little Aegean Turkish spindle. But I did. It has all been spun, and all that's left is the plying, which I plan to do on my spinning wheel. So I just did a little test this morning to see how much of a twist I'd like to put on that yarn, and I will be plying it over the next couple of weeks. I also continue to work on my second clincher scarf by Ash Kearns, and I'm using some wonderful fiber in the Trident colorway from Apothecary Yarns for that project. I am knitting 2 additional asymmetrical designs for the Asymmetrical. One is a second batade. This will be a gift for one of my sisters. And again, I am blending a hand-spun yarn, which is a sour fig yarn from BZB Fibers that I spun last autumn. And I'm combining that with Barocco Ultra Alpaca Light in a grape color. I like the combination of textures in this pattern. stockinette welts in the pattern and garter stitch sections with short rows for the body of this very interesting shawl design. And it's one that stays put, so I think that will be a very nice gift. The other asymmetrical design I'm working on is the Planorbis Corneus Shawl by Hunter Hammerson. This I'm knitting in creatively dyed yarns in the colorway Bean, which I purchased at Rhinebeck last year. And this is a quite intricate lace pattern. There are directions for both the right and wrong sides. So this is something that I work on in complete silence when I'm alone, because any distraction really undermines my ability to work on the lace. Now, this is worsted weight. I'm not knitting it in lace weight. It's not a pattern made to knit in lace weight, but it still has the elements of lace, and I find it quite challenging. The design itself is interesting, and I look forward to telling you more about it when I complete the project. Speaking of the asymmetrical, the asymmetrical craft along, it is continuing in the month of September until September 26th. There are already quite a few finished objects posted on the Ravelry board. Wonderful, beautiful prizes have been contributed to randomly selected winners. If you're still working on your asymmetrical project, keep up the great work and post your finished object to the thread by September 26th. It's been a lot of fun to cheer people on and see the completed projects as they're posted. Ever-expanding skill set. This month, I have been trying to think of ways to cook with barley, and the temperature fluctuations have made this a little disconcerting. At first, I was thinking of some cold dishes because the September weather was hot and humid at the beginning of the month. And then, just as I brought a recipe idea together, the weather turned much cooler, and I was in the mood for a barley and mushroom kind of soup. So it's a good thing that barley is a versatile ingredient. This week I posted more of a menu idea than a precise recipe. It is for something called Hope Club canapés. And these are little hors d'oeuvres that are designed to showcase just a few ingredients at the peak of ripeness. And this is a great time for tomatoes and basil, kind of the last of those things as they're coming in from the gardens here in the Northeast. And the recipe goes like this. You take one slice of beautifully ripe tomato, and on top of that, you place a scoop of cooked barley. This could be warm or cold or even room temperature. I used quick cooking barley for this recipe. I cooked it according to typical instructions, cooking it pretty much like rice, except that I added the juice of half a lemon and I left the lemon rind in the pot while the barley was simmering. So on top of that slab of tomato goes one scoop of barley, and then drizzled over that is some lovely basil pesto. I made my pesto in the very typical way with pine nuts, olive oil, a little bit of lemon juice, salt, and one small clove of garlic. In order to drizzle the pesto, I made it quite loose with a little more olive oil than I would if I were serving pesto with pasta, for instance. And this allowed me to drizzle it over the top of the barley and tomatoes. And then I just finished it off with a little bit of freshly cracked black pepper. This makes a really nice appetizer for dinner or a nice lunch. I was thinking it would even be nice with the addition of a slice of homemade mozzarella cheese just on top of the tomato. The reason this recipe is titled Hoop Club Canapés is that the basil I used for this recipe came from the Hoop Club garden at the school where I work. There are several seniors who have undertaken putting in a small garden in the courtyard of the high school. This project has been a labor of love for the students and their mentor, Senora Paulson. And it's just an extraordinary achievement and such an important addition to our school's sense of community. The students are harvesting some of the vegetables this fall and taking them to a local food bank. And their mentor, Senora Paulson, said that some of them hadn't really sampled some of the vegetables that they were growing. So I thought that I would take in some pesto tomorrow and share it with the students, get their reaction, and see what they might do with a similar ingredient if they were using it in their homes. As September continues and likely gets a little more cool, I do look forward to cooking some comfort food with barley. And Kathleen from Colorado mentioned that this month's Cooking Light has a recipe for butternut squash and barley that's done in a kind of risotto style. I plan to check out that recipe tomorrow when I'm at work and maybe try it a little bit later this week. Additionally, in ever-expanding skill set, I have been continuing my education in processing fleece. I haven't purchased a fleece yet, but I intend to do that at some future date. And when I do, I want to feel confident that I know how to handle the fleece. Sarah, who is Swensty and host of the Fiber Trek podcast, made a gift of the video series Three Bags Full featuring Judith McKenzie. And I have been poring over that video and watching Judith McKenzie work her magic on a number of different kinds of fleece. Three bags full, by the way, is a misnomer because I don't think it's really possible for Judith McKenzie to leave a wool auction like the Estes Park wool auction with only three fleeces. But she does demonstrate very effectively the difference between preparation methods and processing and also storage spinning methods for different kinds of fleeces. So I grow ever closer to that initial purchase of a fleece. Over the Labor Day weekend, I was a yarn lover at large visiting the New Jersey Sheep and Fiber Festival. This is a relatively small festival in Hunterdon County. It's put together by the Garden State Sheep Breeders. And I volunteered to help out at the fleece show and sale early on Saturday morning before the Jazz Fest in Delaware Water Gap was well underway. So I had about 4 hours to spend at the festival. And the first thing I did was I located Andrea Holliday. She is a member of the Garden State Sheep Breeders and in charge of many aspects of the festival. So I helped Andrea and a number of other volunteers check in fleeces as they arrive. It was a very educational process. Andrea had things pretty organized, and there were a variety of different categories for fleeces. There were things that were going to be for show only, for show and sale, and just for sale. And the other workers and I very diligently labeled everything and helped folks as they came in, and very carefully put fleeces that were for sale only under the tables so that they wouldn't be judged. I volunteered doing this for a couple of hours, and then I departed to make my way around to some of the vendors and to visit with the sheep. And then later I wandered back to the fleece show and sale area because Judge Judy had arrived. And Judge Judy is a very generous judge in that she really takes her time with each fleece and reviews it carefully for all categories. She is given a microphone that allows her comments to be broadcast to the small crowd that gathers around her while she's reviewing the fleece. So I stood there for a while and kind of tested my knowledge from the Judith McKenzie videos against what Judge Judy was doing at this fleece show and sale. And indeed, Judge Judy went through the same steps of the process that Judith McKenzie recommended in the Three Bags Full video series. The first thing she did was pluck a staple from a few different key parts of the fleece and snap it several times next to her ear, checking for any kind of breakage. She also used many of the terms that I learned from the Judith McKenzie videos, such as yolk stains, tippiness, strength, durability, vegetative matter, chaff, second cuts. It was really fascinating to watch her work, and I can't say that I was incredibly impressed with the fleeces at the show. I think that Judge Judy was quite kind in reviewing them as carefully as she did, but several times she was pulling pretty disgusting pieces of vegetable and other sorts of matter from the fleece. There were dead flies on a few of the fleeces. She shook out one fleece. She was working over this waist height table that had some mesh spread over it so that it was a very easy way to spread out a fleece and examine it and then roll it back up and put it into the bag. As she shook out and unrolled one of the fleeces, second cuts flew everywhere. It was very distressing. So I got the idea that many of the fleeces were not top quality. And in fact, as Judge Judy was reviewing one of the fleeces, she said, "This is a beautiful fleece. All of the flaws are in the handling of it," which I took to mean that the person who was in charge of that particular sheep was not really doing quite right by it. I'm still new to the whole world of fleece and fiber, so I'm not sure whether I have super exacting standards, whether the fleeces in Judith McKenzie's video were exceptionally beautiful, which I suppose they were. Overall, there were more Shetland fleeces at this show than any other kind of fleece, And I learned a lot of things that I had watched in the video and things I had learned at Maryland Sheep and Wool. I'm very glad to have been a volunteer at this festival. It's something that I would consider doing again. And many of the things that I've been learning from the Judith McKenzie videos and from tagging along with Sarah at the Maryland Sheep and Wool Festival are being affirmed and reconfirmed. So gradually I'm developing a working knowledge and a comfortability with terms and aspects of fleece purchase. And someday I will take that step and actually bring home a fleece to process myself. Another item for Yarn Lover at Large is a weekend of events that will be taking place at my local yarn shop, Mountain Knits and Purls in East Stroudsburg, Pennsylvania. From October 3rd through the 5th, Maggie Jackson will be in residence, and there are a number of opportunities to meet her and work with her and learn from her. On Friday evening, October 3rd, there will be a fashion show of Maggie Jackson designs. I'm very honored to have been asked to model some of the designs in that fashion show. I've known about it for a little while, but now that it's getting closer to the event, I feel weirdly nervous. I've never modeled anything before, so it should be a fun experience. On Saturday and Sunday, Maggie is teaching full day classes. I will be attending the one on Saturday, which is titled Not Another Scarf. I think her goal is to kind of turn your world inside out in terms of knitting techniques and design techniques. And there's another class on Sunday as well. Joanne, the proprietor of Mountain Knits and Purls, has told me that there are still openings for both of the classes, and there is a discount for taking both classes. I will provide a link to the Mountain Knits and Purls website and contact information in case you are interested. I was very pleased as Maggie Jackson's visit draws near that the Knitmore girls put up an extended interview that they did with Maggie Jackson in California a number of years ago. She is so engaging and so charming. I really enjoyed listening to that interview, and I feel like it was excellent preparation for modeling the designs as well as learning from Maggie when she visits the shop. Off the shelf. This time of year always puts me in mind of one of my favorite passages from Jane Austen's Persuasion. So I thought I would read a short passage of prose this week. If you're not familiar with Persuasion, or if it's been a little while since you've read it, Persuasion is the story of Anne Elliot and her unrequited love for Captain Wentworth. They knew one another early in their lives. They fell in love. He proposed. And her family, while they didn't exactly oppose the marriage, they were decidedly unenthusiastic. And so she broke it off. Now, Anne is 27 and somewhat faded. She has lost her bloom. She's overlooked in almost every area of her life. And her family has moved away from the family home to Bath. And she is left in the countryside visiting her younger sister, Mary. When Captain Wentworth shows up, he's the same handsome, dashing Captain Wentworth. Anne has to contend with him getting the attention of two young ladies who live in the village. So in this passage, Anne, her sister Mary, and the two young ladies, the Miss Musgroves, are about to take a walk on a lovely autumn afternoon. Just as they were setting off, the gentlemen returned. They had taken out a young dog, which had spoiled their sport, and sent them back early. Their time and strength and spirits were therefore exactly ready for this walk, and they entered into it with pleasure. Could Anne have foreseen such a junction, she would certainly have stayed home. But from some feelings of interest and curiosity, she fancied now that it was too late to retract, and the whole six set forward together in the direction chosen by the Miss Musgroves, who evidently considered the walk as under their guidance. Anne's object was not to be in the way of anybody, and when the narrow paths across the fields made many separations necessary to keep with her brother and sister. Her pleasure in the walk must arise from the exercise and the day, from the view of the last smiles of the year upon the tawny leaves and withered hedges, and from repeating to herself some few of the thousand poetical descriptions extant of autumn, that season of peculiar and inexhaustible influence on the mind, of taste and tenderness, that season which had drawn from every poet worthy of being read some attempt at description or some lines of feeling. She occupied her mind as much as possible in such like musings and quotations, but it was not possible that when within reach of Captain Wentworth's conversation with either of the Miss Musgroves, she should not try to hear it, yet she caught very little remarkable.
Acorns are dropping off my Jenny's house. Two ducks in my spyglass, fiery as a mouse. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.
Thanks for listening. Music for this episode is Sweet, music and lyrics by Samuel St. Thomas, performed by Chris DeLong and Cesar Diaz. Eat well and stay strong as you hone your post-apocalyptic skill set this week.
Sycamore trees are blazing like a rainbow fire. Just like Linda Curtis, but out on a wire. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. Nature's ever get you high till your face is smile. Jump a river naked, hike a country mile. It's a silly nature thing. It's a silly nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing. It's a mighty fine nature thing.